You're listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for tuning in to the newest episode of the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Soaker. This episode is being released on March 27th, 2025. And this week we're talking about church buildings. In the previous episode, we talked about the disappearance of kitchens from church buildings. But what about the building itself? What should a church building look like? What may it be used for? And how do we raise money to pay for it? We're going to talk about all of that today. For links to the story we're talking about and some other related materials, check out the show notes for this episode at plainbibleteaching.com/podcast/032725. Now for our story this week. Americans think church should look churchy. From Christianity Today, outreach-minded evangelicals have often argued that church buildings need to be less churchy to draw in would-be seekers. But that might not actually be true, according to recent research from Barna Group and Aspen Group, asking a representative sample of 2,000 Americans questions about the architecture of sacred spaces. When Americans close their eyes, they can picture a church, even if they rarely or never attend one. They have an idea of what a church should look like and feel like, and a preference. That preference is quite traditional. Nearly 90% of Americans say a church should be easily identifiable, and 8 of 10 say they want a building to reflect the beauty of God. There are some, to be sure, who prefer that churches feel modern and trendy, but most Americans want religious spaces that feel more timeless and transcendent. Now, I found that to be a little bit interesting. Obviously, as we look around, church buildings have changed a lot over the years. But even with that, people have some idea in their mind of what a church building looks like when they picture it in their heads. Now, not everyone's idea will be the same, but everyone pretty much has some idea of what these buildings are to look like. Now, when a church builds a meeting place, we would hope they would use wisdom and exercise good stewardship and create a facility that will help them do the work that God has given the church to do. And then beyond that, a lot of this is just a matter of personal preference. So for that reason, I really don't want to spend a lot of time talking about what a church building should look like. Instead, I want to use this as a springboard to talk about the building itself, regardless of what it looks like. One point to keep in mind is that a church does not need a building. One point that we often hear is that the early church did not have church buildings. They met in homes. And while we know that many congregations met in homes in the first century, that does not mean that all of them did, or that some of them may not have met somewhere else. In fact, recent archaeological evidence suggests that some early congregations did have buildings that were dedicated to the assembly of the church, which means they were not homes. I'll link to that article in the show notes if you want to read more about that. But in the New Testament, churches met in various places. At the beginning, when the church was first established in Jerusalem, they met in the temple at a place called Solomon's Portico. We read about that in Acts chapter 5 and verse 12. Paul and the disciples in Ephesus in Acts chapter 19 met for 2 years in the school of Tyrannus. In Troas, the disciples there met in an upper room. And of course, there are various passages that talk about how they met in different homes. And today, churches can meet in various places. They can meet in homes, they can meet in schools, libraries, hotels, and the list can go on. But even if a local church does not have a building of its own, it can still do everything that the Lord expects the local church to do. So that leads to another question about church buildings. Do we even have authority for a church building? I addressed this question in one of the early articles I wrote on Plain Bible Teaching. I'll link to that in the show notes. It's called, Do We Have Authority for a Church Building? And we won't go over everything in that article, but I just want to summarize a couple of the main points. Number one, we know that each local church is to assemble. The Hebrew writer gave the instruction to not forsake our own assembling together, as is the habit of some, but encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. When Paul wrote to the church at Corinth, he said that they would come together as a church. that necessitates a place to assemble. Now, as far as what this place is, we know that churches in the New Testament met in various types of places. And we already went over those briefly. They met in a school, they met at a place in the temple, they met in homes, they met in various places. But there was no uniform pattern. So without a specific type of place given in the New Testament, and we see a variety of places being used, we can know that autonomous congregations can use their best judgment to determine the most expedient way to assemble. This doesn't necessarily mean buying or building a meeting place, but it could include that. So then, if a church is authorized to have a building, what may that building be used for? In other words, if a congregation already has a facility, are they permitted to use it any way they want to? It is common to see churches use their buildings for a variety of things, for youth activities, for childcare, for community events, and the list can go on. Those who are proponents of using a church's facilities for these types of things will often talk about how this is just a case of exercising good stewardship. Why have the building just be empty and not used for most of the week when we can use it for these other purposes? And to be clear, many of those things that they say we're going to use the building for, the church facilities for, many of those things are good in themselves. But that doesn't mean that the building or facilities or resources owned by the church should be used in order to facilitate those events happening. We already talked about how the church is authorized to have a building, but why are they authorized to have a building? Well, it would be to engage in the works that the Lord has given the church to do, which are evangelism and edification and limited benevolence. We won't get into that in more detail, but I'll have an article in the show notes that talks about that in more detail, talks about different passages if you want to check that out. But that is the work that the Lord has given the church to do: evangelism, edification, and to a limited degree, benevolence. The church is not then authorized to engage in other works. So for that reason, there is no authority to use the property and resources of the church for anything beyond the works that God has given the church to do. Now, let me make a side point on this just briefly. In the case of churches who meet in people's homes, that is a little bit of a different situation simply because of who is providing the location in which to meet. Our home is where our family lives. And that is its purpose. That means we can use our home for anything that our family is permitted or authorized by God to do. We can eat here, we can sleep here, we can watch movies, we can have friends over to play board games. I run my publishing business out of my home. And also, if we chose to do so, we could even host the local church and have them assemble in our home for worship or Bible study. And we could even do that in the same room that we do these other activities. But that is because it is our home. Our family is providing this. And that's an important distinction to make because God has given more liberties to individual Christians, or we could say families as well, than he has to the local church. The church was specifically designed by God for a particular work, for evangelism, edification, and then limited benevolence. We need to limit the activity of the church to that. This also means we need to limit the use of the property and resources that are controlled by the church or provided by the church to the work that God has given the church to do. Now, finally, I want to spend a few minutes talking about raising money to build a church building. Can this be done? And if so, how can it be done? I bring this up because I regularly receive requests from people contacting me, either through Plain Bible Teaching or contacting the church where I am, asking for funds to help their church build a church building. And I understand why these requests are made. They've likely seen other people make this request. They think it's completely normal. And I think that it's very possible that a lot of brethren simply haven't thought about what should or should not be done in terms of raising money for a church building, a building in which to meet. So this is a similar question to one we asked earlier. What can the church building be used for? And since it is a property or resource of the church, it can be used for the work that God has given the church to do. In the same way, if we ask the question about how to raise money for a church building, We can start by finding out what method or methods have been given in the New Testament for a church to raise money. And when we do that, we find one method, a collection on the first day of the week. 1 Corinthians 16:1-2 says, "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so do you also. On the first day of every week, each one of you is to put aside and save as he may prosper, so that no collections be made when I come." Now, someone might quibble and say that that collection was for a specific purpose, for helping needy saints in Jerusalem, and that's true. But the fact remains, this is the only method that we find in the New Testament for churches collecting money. When we look at the New Testament pattern, churches do not send money to other churches except when there is a severe benevolent need, as is talked about in Acts 11:29-30, when the church at Antioch sent support or sent relief to needy saints in the churches of Judea. So if there is an extreme benevolent need, then a church may send money in that case to another church. But building a meeting place is not a benevolent need. Remember what we talked about at the beginning. A church does not need a building in order to carry out the work that God has given the church to do. Churches also are not to solicit money from people who are not members. Now, of course, someone can choose to give to a church that he is not a member of, but that does not mean that churches are actively soliciting money from people who are not members. If a church is going to raise money to build a meeting place, it needs to come from the same place where all of its money is collected, through the collection on the first day of the week, as 1 Corinthians 16 talks about. Now, if brethren want to give more a particular week or over a certain period of time because they know the congregation is trying to raise money to build a building in which to meet, they can choose to do that. But as far as what we can know from the scriptures about how the church is able to or is authorized to collect money for its work, the collection on the first day of the week is the only way that we find in the New Testament. So in summary, a church building, regardless of what it looks like, can be a valuable resource to help the local church do its work. And if we have a building in which to meet, we need to use it for that work and not for just anything that we might imagine. At the same time, we don't need to become so focused on obtaining a building, if we don't have one, thinking that, well, we need it, that we ignore certain biblical principles in order to raise money to obtain it. That's all for this week. Thank you for listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. I hope you found this episode to be helpful. For links to the story we talked about and some other related materials, check out the show notes for this episode at plainbibleteaching.com/podcast/032725. If you have a moment to rate and review the podcast or to share it with others, that is always appreciated. And if you're listening to this, remember that we also upload video versions of the podcast to the Plain Bible Teaching YouTube channel. So if you would prefer to watch this on video, that option is there for you. And if you are watching this on YouTube, please like this video and subscribe to the channel so you can see the other videos we post here from time to time. And if you see a news story or have some topic that you think would make for a good discussion, send that to me at andy@plainbibleteaching.com. Thanks again for listening, and I hope to talk to you again next time.
Thank you for listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others. Also, be sure to sign up for the Plain Bible Teaching Weekly Newsletter. This free newsletter will be delivered to your inbox each Friday with articles, podcasts, videos, sermon outlines, and more. Visit plainbibleteaching.com to subscribe today.